Welcome back to AI Unchained. We've got a packed one today because the AI story this week is basically three stories pretending to be separate stories. Security failures, open model competition, and AI companies vacuuming up the internet like it's an all-you-can-eat buffet.
And somehow, all three point to the same question. Are we building this stuff faster than we can control it? Because the headlines this week are not exactly calming.
And hear me out. They're signs the industry is maturing. This could be huge. When systems start breaking at scale, companies finally get serious. We saw this with cloud. We saw this with mobile security. AI agents are entering the, okay, this is real now phase.
Hold on though. Real now is one way to describe it. Another way is over half of enterprises have already had an AI agent security incident. 54%. And apparently, a shocking number of companies are still letting agents share credentials like it's a Netflix password in 2017.
Which is insane, but also predictable. We literally called this months ago.
Multiple times, by the way.
Yeah. Back on April 24th, we talked about operational chaos and restructuring pressure spilling into AI governance. Then, on May 1st, we covered the whole ChatGPT behavior controversy and OpenAI rolling out advanced security controls. We said the next phase would be agent oversight and enterprise trust issues.
And here we are. Enterprises deployed autonomous agents before figuring out basic identity management. Incredible strategy. What if we gave the intern root access and no supervision?
Wait. But this is exactly why I'm bullish on the next generation of AI infrastructure companies. Identity layers, observability, permissioning, audit trails. There's going to be an entire trillion-dollar ecosystem around AI accountability.
Maybe. Or maybe companies discover they don't actually want autonomous agents making sensitive decisions in production environments. The flip side is that every agentic workflow demo looks amazing, right up until payroll gets deleted.
You always go straight to catastrophe.
Because someone has to. You're one funding round away from saying, what if the AI just runs the company?
Don't tempt me.
I knew it.
We're also diving into Kimi K3 and the broader open frontier intelligence race, which honestly feels like the open source wars all over again. This could completely reshape the competitive landscape.
I'm not so sure. Every time a new model drops, people declare the incumbents dead. Then 6 months later, enterprises still pick the safest vendor with compliance paperwork and customer support.
Okay, but Kimi is part of a real trend here. Faster iteration, cheaper inference, more global competition. The moat is getting thinner.
The moat may be thinner technologically. Commercially, different story. Open models are great until legal, security, and governance departments enter the chat.
Speaking of legal departments entering the chat.
Oh boy.
We also have the Suno leak story. Allegations that massive datasets from Deezer, YouTube, and Pond5 were fed into training pipelines. And honestly, this is where AI gets messy fast.
Messy is putting it lightly. The entire generative AI economy still runs on this unresolved question. What exactly counts as fair training data? Because right now, the industry answer appears to be, we'll find out in court later.
But consumers love the products. That's the tension. People want AI music tools, AI video tools, AI everything.
Consumers also love free streaming until artists stop getting paid. The flip side is, we may be normalizing a world where every creative work becomes training fuel by default.
Or we unlock an explosion of creativity where anyone can produce studio quality content.
And creators spend the next decade litigating ownership rights.
See? This is why the show works.
Because I stop you from declaring the singularity every Thursday?
Exactly. We've got security disasters, open model warfare, copyright chaos, and apparently 35 unresolved predictions hanging over this podcast like an SEC investigation.
One of these weeks, we're going to have to do an accountability episode.
Absolutely not.
Coward.
All right, let's get into it. Starting with the AI agent security gap and why enterprises may have sleepwalked into the next major cybersecurity crisis. Microsoft open sourcing Comic Chat is the most gloriously weird tech story of the week. This is peak internet archaeology. For people who don't remember it, Comic Chat was this late 90s Microsoft experiment where your messages appeared as comic book speech bubbles attached to cartoon avatars. Basically, proto-Discord meets meme culture before memes existed.
And also proto-annoying. I used it once. The avatars would auto-generate facial expressions based on what you typed, and half the time the software thought sarcasm was rage. Which, honestly, maybe that was ahead of its time too.
Wait. That's exactly why this matters. Everybody's talking about AI companions, AI interfaces, multimodal communication. Microsoft accidentally built an early social AI UX 30 years ago. Open sourcing it now means developers can remix the idea with modern models.
Hold on, though. I think people are romanticizing old software because nostalgia is profitable. Open sourcing dead products doesn't automatically create innovation. Most of these projects become digital museums that 12 developers on GitHub star and nobody uses.
I'm bullish on this one specifically because the interface idea is weird enough to come back around. Think about where chat is heading. Right now, everything is just text boxes. But humans respond emotionally to characters, reactions, visual cues. Comic Chat tried to make online conversation feel expressive instead of sterile.
Sure, but there's a reason the industry simplified toward plain messaging apps. Comic-style interfaces add friction. People want speed. Slack won because it's efficient, not because it has a cartoon raccoon looking confused when your boss messages you at midnight.
Counterpoint. Gen Z lives inside visual language already. Emojis, reaction GIFs, VTubers, AI avatars. Comic Chat was basically trying to translate emotional context into visuals before bandwidth even existed for it.
The flip side is we're entering dangerous territory with AI-generated personas. If you combine modern LLMs with animated identity systems, you get emotional manipulation at scale. Companies already optimize notifications for engagement. Now imagine AI avatars that can mirror your mood in real time.
But that's true of literally every communication platform now.
Yes, and I'm not convinced make it more psychologically immersive is the answer.
Okay, but the technical side here is fascinating too. The source release gives people a snapshot of old-school Microsoft engineering thinking. There's educational value. We spend so much time talking about trillion-parameter reasoning models and reinforcement learning systems, like that Ring Zero paper floating around this week. And then you look back at software built under insane hardware constraints. It's humbling.
That part I actually agree with. Modern engineers sometimes forget how much creativity came from limitation. Comic Chat had to infer tone with tiny computational budgets. No giant GPUs, no cloud inference, just clever heuristics.
Exactly. Today, we brute force intelligence with scale. Back then, it was, can we fake social presence on a Pentium? Different era.
Although to be fair, some of those heuristics were hilariously bad. You'd type, I'm dying laughing, and your avatar looked like it witnessed a crime scene.
Which honestly still describes most enterprise software emotional intelligence.
Fair.
But here's the bigger opportunity. Open source changes how cultural artifacts survive. We talk endlessly about preserving books and films, but software disappears constantly. A lot of early internet history is just gone because nobody maintained it.
That's the strongest argument for this story, in my opinion. Preservation, not necessarily revival. Open source gives historians, developers, and researchers a way to understand how social computing evolved.
I think there's revival potential too. Somebody's absolutely going to bolt an LLM onto Comic Chat and create AI sitcom mode.
Oh no.
No, seriously. Imagine group chats where AI agents visually participate as characters. Meetings become interactive comics, educational tools for kids. This could be huge for accessibility and engagement.
Or unbelievably distracting. Every productivity app already feels like a casino floor. We do not need AI-generated reaction faces turning quarterly planning meetings into Marvel panels.
You say that now, but if Microsoft relaunches Comic Chat Copilot Edition next year,
I am uninstalling Civilization.
You joke, but the industry trend is real. Interfaces are becoming more conversational, more visual, more personality-driven. Open sourcing something this old is like uncovering an evolutionary ancestor.
Okay, you've partially convinced me there's historical significance beyond nostalgia bait. I'm still skeptical there's a mass-market product hiding here.
So we agree to disagree on the commercial angle.
Yeah, but I do think engineers should study old systems more often instead of assuming bigger models automatically mean better ideas.
Especially right now. Because everybody's racing towards scale. which actually connects pretty cleanly to the broader debate happening around reasoning models and whether bigger AI systems are hitting diminishing returns. Okay, this Suno leak is wild. And not just some startup got hacked, wild. We're talking internal logs allegedly showing over 113,000 hours scraped from YouTube Music, 62,000 from Pond5, 12,000 from Deezer, plus plans for 1 million hours of podcasts via RSS. This is basically the AI music industry's Napster moment in plain text.
Hold on, though. It's worse than Napster in one sense, because Napster users were sharing files. Here you've got a company allegedly industrializing ingestion at massive scale while simultaneously building a multi-billion dollar business. Suno's sitting around a $5.4 billion valuation with 100 million users, and now the receipts are leaking out.
But here's why this matters beyond the legal drama. This leak confirms something the entire AI market has been dancing around. These foundation models are only as good as the data they absorb. Music AI that sounds amazing, probably trained on amazing music.
Right, and the music labels have been saying exactly that in court since 2024. Sony and UMG didn't pull these lawsuits out of thin air. The lawsuit reportedly sought $150,000 per infringement incident. If courts interpret every song scrape as an infringement, the math gets cartoonishly bad very quickly.
Wait. But there's a practical reality here. If you make an AI music generator without learning from existing music, what exactly is it supposed to learn from? Silence? Kazoo recordings from middle school bands?
That argument sounds compelling until you apply it to literally any copyrighted industry. How is I supposed to make movies without watching movies? Doesn't suddenly become legal because there's a GPU involved.
Fair. But I do think this is where the market's heading. Licensing deals become the oil pipelines of AI. The labels probably win economically, even if they lose philosophically. Because now every AI company realizes, oh wow, maybe scraping first and apologizing later isn't a stable long-term strategy.
Maybe. But there's another layer here people are glossing over. Customer data got hit too. Emails, phone numbers, Stripe payment data allegedly exposed through this shy Hulud worm attack. Every AI startup right now is sprinting so hard toward growth that operational security keeps becoming an afterthought.
The move fast and accidentally leak your user strategy.
Exactly. And the irony is incredible. The company training on massive datasets gets its own internal dataset exfiltrated. It's like AI karma.
The worm name is also aggressively on brand. Shy Hulud. Somewhere a hacker is extremely pleased with himself.
Somewhere, a cybersecurity team is updating their LinkedIn profiles.
But I'm bullish on one outcome here. This could force the industry into legit data marketplaces. Imagine a future where artists opt into training pools and get royalties every time the model generates something stylistically adjacent.
I'm not so sure. The economics may not support that dream. AI companies want infinite cheap data. Rights holders want premium pricing. Those incentives are fundamentally in tension.
But Spotify solved music distribution economics.
Did they? Ask musicians?
Okay, fair hit.
Also, the podcast angle is getting overlooked. The leaked code reportedly discussed downloading around 1 million hours of podcasts through RSS feeds. That means voice models, conversational cadence, personality replication. This isn't just about songs anymore. It's about synthetic media broadly.
Which, by the way, is technically fascinating. For listeners, these models don't store songs like an MP3 library. They analyze patterns, rhythm, harmony, vocal texture, transitions, then compress those relationships into math. The controversy is whether that learning process itself violates copyright.
And courts haven't fully settled that yet. That's the trillion-dollar question under all generative AI litigation right now. Is training transformative, or is it unauthorized copying at industrial scale?
My prediction: the courts split the baby. Training becomes legal-ish under certain conditions, but output similarity and licensing obligations get tightened hard.
I think there's a real chance the opposite happens. Judges may look at explicit scraping instructions like these leaked logs and say, nope, this wasn't incidental learning. This was deliberate acquisition of copyrighted material.
If that happens, half the generative AI ecosystem has a problem.
More than half.
Which is why every AI founder listening to this is suddenly asking their legal team very uncomfortable questions.
And every media company is looking at its archives like, maybe we're sitting on a gold mine.
Speaking of companies trying to turn massive archives into leverage, the next story gets into governments doing basically the same thing with data. Except this time it's geopolitics instead of music royalties. This stat blew my mind. 54% of enterprises have already had an AI agent security incident, or at least a near miss. And we are, what, in like inning one of enterprise agents? This could be huge for cybersecurity companies.
Hold on, though. The more important stat is why it's happening. Only 32% of companies give every AI agent its own identity and permissions. Everybody else is basically doing the digital equivalent of sharing the office Netflix password.
Totally. But this is classic enterprise behavior. New technology arrives, productivity goes vertical, security lags for 18 months, then an entire industry gets built. We saw it with cloud, mobile, SaaS. I'm bullish on the infrastructure layer here.
I think you're underplaying how reckless this is. These agents are not passive software tools. They can take actions. They can move money, query databases, send emails, trigger workflows, and companies are apparently letting multiple agents share the same credentials or API keys.
Right, but...
No, wait. Imagine you hire 10 interns and give them all the same master key to the building. Then one intern gets manipulated by a phishing email. You now have no idea who opened what door or stole what file. That's basically what these companies are doing with AI agents.
Fair. But I actually think the near misses are the healthy sign here. 36% caught issues before damage happened. That tells me companies are stress testing this stuff in real environments instead of sitting frozen on the sidelines.
Or it tells you they got lucky.
Maybe both.
The thing that worries me is the psychology. The report says enterprises are comfortable inside the gap. That's the scary part. People think because the agent sounds smart, it's trustworthy, but these systems are probabilistic. They improvise. If you over-permission them, they can fail in weird ways.
Explain that in plain English for people listening.
Sure. Traditional software is like a vending machine. Press B6, get chips. Predictable. AI agents are more like giving a smart assistant a vague task and hoping they make good choices. Most of the time they do. Sometimes they confidently do something insane because they interpreted the goal incorrectly.
Which is why identity and isolation matter. I actually think AI identity management becomes its own category. Every agent gets a scoped identity. Limited permissions, a sandboxed environment. Basically zero trust for robots.
Except companies are not spending enough on it. The report says security for agents is still a tiny slice of overall security budgets. Everybody's spending on the flashy demo layer. Nobody wants to buy the boring seatbelt.
Yeah, but that changes after the first major public disaster. You know this. The market always reprices risk after an event.
That's not reassuring.
I know. But it's realistic. Look at cloud security. For years, people stored sensitive data in badly configured S3 buckets. Then breaches happened, and entire billion-dollar companies emerged to fix it.
Here's where I disagree with you. I don't think this follows the same pattern as cloud. AI agents are harder because they have autonomy. Security teams understand servers and databases. They do not fully understand emergent behavior from language models connected to internal systems.
But the tooling will improve fast.
Maybe. But attackers improve fast, too. The report said enterprises are evenly split on whether their defenses are keeping pace with AI-enabled attackers. That is not confidence. That's basically half the market saying, we think the bad guys may already be ahead.
Counterpoint. This is exactly why enterprises won't slow down adoption. If AI agents increase productivity by 20%, nobody's opting out. The incentive is too strong. So the answer becomes better governance, not stopping deployment.
Okay, I'll give you that. I don't think companies can put the toothpaste back in the tube now. The operational gains are real.
There we go. Tiny bit of optimism from Core.
Don't get used to it. I still think most enterprises are deploying agents with the security maturity of a college group project.
Honestly, the funniest part is that humans already have terrible password hygiene. And now we're apparently teaching AI agents to share credentials too. We've successfully passed our worst habits onto the machines.
Incredible cultural transmission. The robots inherited technical debt before they even became useful.
And speaking of technical debt, The next thing that ties directly into this is governments starting to notice these risks. Because regulators are absolutely not going to love autonomous systems with shared credentials touching sensitive data. Okay, this Kimi K3 announcement is kind of wild. We're talking about an open model with 2.8 trillion parameters, 1 million token context window, native vision, and apparently they're claiming frontier-level reasoning. This could be huge for the open-source AI ecosystem.
Hold on, though. Frontier level, according to whose benchmark? Because the fine print matters here. They literally admit it still trails the top proprietary models, Claude Fable 5 and GPT 5.6 Sol. So I don't want people hearing open frontier intelligence and assuming parity with the best closed systems.
Sure, but that's exactly why this matters. The gap is narrowing while the economics are getting insane. They're quoting cash hit pricing at like 30 cents per million tokens input and $3 output. That is aggressively cheap if the performance is even close.
The cash hit thing is important, though, because most people hear the low number and stop reading. The cash mispricing jumps dramatically. And the reason they can offer the cheap tier is this disaggregated inference architecture from Mooncake with over a 90% cash hit rate in coding workloads.
Which is actually brilliant engineering. For normal people listening, imagine the AI remembers huge chunks of repeated code requests so it doesn't have to recompute everything from scratch every time. It's basically reusing work. That's why the costs collapse.
Yes, but coding workloads are unusually repetitive. Enterprises are going to hear 90% cash hit rate and assume all AI tasks get that efficiency. They don't. Creative reasoning, legal analysis, research synthesis, those are messier.
Wait. But coding is the killer app right now. That's the whole market. If you can make coding agents dramatically cheaper, suddenly every startup can afford persistent AI developers running all day long.
Or every startup floods the internet with even more AI-generated garbage code that nobody audits.
You are unbelievably bearish.
No, I'm realistic. Open-weight, trillion-parameter systems lower the barrier for everyone, including bad actors. And before people say open always wins, remember, inference costs at this scale are still enormous. They've got 896 experts in this MOE setup, activating only 16 at a time, which is clever, but serving this thing globally is not cheap.
But the efficiency gains are the story. They're claiming 2.5x scaling efficiency improvement over Kimi K2. That's the ballgame now. We're entering the era where architecture matters more than just brute force training runs.
I agree with that part. The delta attention and attention residual stuff is genuinely interesting. In plain English, they're trying to help the model keep track of information over gigantic conversations without melting GPUs. A million token context window sounds absurd, but if the retrieval and attention quality hold up, that changes workflows.
Exactly. Think about feeding an entire corporate code base, every legal contract, every Slack conversation, all into one persistent reasoning engine.
Which sounds dystopian when you phrase it that way.
No, it sounds productive. This is why I'm bullish. Open models are becoming good enough for enterprise sovereignty. Companies don't want all their proprietary data flowing through closed American APIs forever.
Ah, now we get to the geopolitics of it.
Absolutely. Kimi's basically saying, here's a near frontier model, open weights coming July 27th, run it yourself. That's a direct challenge to the closed model incumbents.
But there's a strategic contradiction here. The more capable these open systems become, the harder it is for frontier labs to justify massive API margins, which means fewer companies can afford the next generation of training runs. Open source success could actually reduce the incentive to push the frontier further.
I don't buy that. Competition accelerates everything. Look at what happened in cloud computing, Linux, databases.
AI isn't Linux. Training one of these models requires nation-state-scale infrastructure.
For now.
No, probably for longer than people think. And I'll make another unpopular point. Parameter count is becoming marketing theater. 3 trillion class sounds impressive, but sparse MOE models don't behave like dense trillion parameter models.
True, but users care about output quality and cost. If it performs close enough and it's cheap, nobody cares about the architecture trivia.
Developers care. Reliability matters. Hallucination rates matter. Long context degradation matters. Every lab says 1 million token context now, but half the models lose coherence halfway through a long reasoning chain.
Fair criticism. But if Kimi actually ships stable long-horizon coding agents at these economics, this becomes the default backbone for a huge chunk of the open agent ecosystem.
Maybe. I'm still not convinced enterprises will trust an open Chinese frontier model with sensitive workloads. There are regulatory and security questions that aren't going away.
Fair. Although I suspect cost pressure eventually overwhelms ideology. CFOs have a funny way of changing principles.
That might be the truest thing you've said all episode.
And speaking of cost pressure, the next thing happening in AI infrastructure makes this Kimi launch look almost tame by comparison. All right, that's a wrap. We covered AI agents eating more enterprise workflows, the chip war getting even hotter, and the absolutely wild week in Washington where every politician suddenly became an AI expert overnight. This could be huge for productivity. I'm bullish on the idea that we're entering the AI infrastructure decade, the same way the internet reshaped everything in the 2000s.
Hold on, though. Every decade gets labeled transformational by people trying to raise money. The flip side is we're also seeing massive concentration of power. A handful of companies control the chips, the models, the cloud infrastructure, and increasingly the distribution. That's not exactly a recipe for healthy competition.
But competition is coming fast. Open source models are improving every month. Startups are moving quicker than the incumbents. Here's why this matters. Innovation cycles are compressing. A 5-person team can now build products that used to require 100 engineers.
Sure, but we've also seen this movie before. Lower barriers to entry don't automatically mean sustainable businesses. Wait. Half these AI startups are basically wrappers around APIs with questionable economics.
Okay, fair. Some of them are absolutely PowerPoint with a seed round.
Exactly.
But the survivors? They're going to define the next generation of software. And I'll say it right now. My bold prediction is that within 2 years, every Fortune 500 company will have at least one fully autonomous AI workflow replacing a major operational function. Not assisting, replacing.
I'm not so sure. My prediction is almost the opposite. Within 2 years, we're going to hit a regulatory and legal wall after a major AI-related failure. Maybe in healthcare, maybe finance, maybe autonomous systems, and deployment slows dramatically because companies realize move fast and break things does not work when real-world liability enters the chat.
See, this is where CORE becomes the human seatbelt for the podcast.
Someone has to be.
But you've changed your tune a little. 6 months ago, you said enterprises wouldn't trust AI agents at all.
That's true. And to be fair, you called the enterprise adoption curve earlier than I expected. I still think trust and governance are the bottleneck, though.
I'll take that partial victory. Mark the tape.
Don't get used to it.
Before we go, huge thanks to everyone listening, subscribing, sending us clips, arguing with us online, especially the people calling CORE the last adult in tech.
That's both flattering and mildly concerning.
And shout out to the audience members who remembered my prediction about AI-generated video exploding this year. Everybody laughed at me, and now your social feed is 40% synthetic humans selling productivity software.
The scary part is some people still can't tell.
Which is exactly why next week's episode is going to be fun. We're watching the next wave of AI regulation proposals, the ongoing semiconductor showdown, and whether the public markets finally reward AI companies for actual revenue instead of vibes.
Plus, I want to dig deeper into the labor impact. Everybody loves talking about AI replacing tasks. Fewer people want to talk about what happens to workers in the transition period.
Fair point. Okay, final thought from me. Despite the chaos, despite the hype cycles, despite all the noise, I think we're still early. The tools are getting dramatically better, faster, and cheaper. I'm optimistic people are going to build incredible things.
And my final thought, progress is real, but incentives matter. The companies moving fastest are not always the ones thinking most carefully about long-term consequences. So keep your eyes open while everyone's promising a revolution.
That's why this show works.
Debatable.
All right, everybody. Thanks for hanging with us. We'll see you next time on AI Unchained.
See you next week.